Thank
think
you, Patrick.
we should start. Good afternoon, everybody. You are most welcome to this meeting amongst many meetings. I have been given a list of people who would be coming from
Thank you so much.
Totally appreciate it. Thank you for once more availing yourself. From our side, there might be some members who are here yet. I see Mr. Do you have the honorable members?
Thank you.
I not seen them, but I've seen them now. Apologies. So I have called you by everyone about the fact that you are here. However, I wanted to note those that are our guests. With the second, we have our position, because today that we can be talking. So, let me end to the DTIC. The DDG there is the leader of the whole delegation. You that way, and we will then, as we find, engage once you are done. DDG, over to you.
Thank you, Chair. My apologies, I'm feeling a bit flu today. I have requested my colleague, Dr. Simani, for today's meeting. So that we can proceed. But I think, the last time when we were here at the committee, we made the two entities, made substantial input on the regulatory space that they occupy in terms of putting questions to the team. What we got directed from our Parliament Liaison Officer is that for today's session, we will get, we will give, afford the honourable members an opportunity to ask questions, and we can respond accordingly. But I think maybe Dr. Chengi Timani can recap on some of the issues that were raised previously, and then we take it from there. If that's okay with you, Chair.
That's fine, Ms. Pele, and we wish you well and speedy recovery. Take care of yourself.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to honorable members for hosting us again for the second time. Ms. Pele indicated, we are here so that members can ask questions on the issues that we have raised in the last time. Perhaps what I can say today before we get into that is that as the DTIC, we are in support of the areas that the public protector indicated for improvement. These areas include better coordination between coordination and communication between the different role players in the regulatory value chain. As such, we have already been engaging with our sister department, the Department of Transport, to ensure that our policies are actually aligned. And I also know that both the NRCS and the SABS have reviewed the memorandum of understanding between themselves and the Department of Transport. At the technical level, there is now a new project called Safer Vehicles 2025. And this project involves all the stakeholders, including the Department of Transport and the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition, and as well as the other role players. So I just want to say that we are cognizant of the issues that have been raised, and we are actually doing something about it. I also may just as well add that it's government policy actually to allow manufacturers and builders of imported motor vehicles, these MIBs, to build, manufacture or import vehicles for use, for private use as well as for selling. MIBs that are involved in converting panel vans to minibuses and that are legally doing so have been registered by the Department for Transport through the system that the department actually manages. But however, the National Land Transport Act does exempt MIBs that do the same, but for vehicles that are for private use. Therefore, the role of the NRCS is to inspect and approve vehicles from registered MIBs. I think this distinction is important because the MIBs that are not registered, vehicles from their workshops can and do leak and get sold as minibus vehicles that are designed to carry passengers as taxis. And as it stands, there is no mechanism now to close that that gap to ensure that the leakage from those MIBs that are not registered, that are not required to be registered, actually do enter the other space. So this two-pronged approach that the policy allowed, it's an area that we feel that government, so ourselves as the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition and Transport and perhaps yourselves, it's an area that we think we should really look at again and see if we can't do something about it. Because the two-pronged approach seems to be where problems are arising. I think so. That's really the only thing that perhaps I should mention as we start. Because as you are aware, when this delegation to be the inspector was given to the NRCS, there was no additional resources that were actually given to the NRCS to make sure that this work is carried out as well as it could. And it seems that there was no additional funding because the CEO of NRCS in 2009 actually raised this as a complaint to say that there is no additional funding, but the entity is expected to do this work. It also requires that the technical expertise, the engineers at both the NRCS and the SABS are up to the same level as the engineers that are found in places like at Toyota, for them to actually do this work as well as they could. So we did not make allowance, I think, as the policy owners, as government, for that. And that the lack and not making allowance for that to happen is showing that perhaps we are not regulating this area as well as we could. So I just want to put that up front and say that we agree there are areas that we can improve on, but we think we need a little bit more. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Demana. I was about to stop you. I want to invite the honorable members. And as I invite you to raise the questions we might have had, because we didn't have enough time. We have a little bit more time today, but we mustn't abuse it so that we can ask maybe follow-up questions. However, I think from the onset, I think the challenge we are having, without preempting what my colleagues want to say, I've got a list also, but I'll give them first. I think the posture and the reason we call DTIC is that we have a situation where people have died and people continue to die. And there are people who have lost money because they were misled. And amongst other things, not only some of the entities that report yourselves, it is alleged they didn't do their job properly. So now when we come and make excuses now that there are not resources and everything, and I'm sure the NRCS will talk for themselves in terms of resources, it is always a bit disheartening. But I will give you an opportunity so that I don't speak alone at the end. Let me invite my colleagues now that we ask questions that we couldn't ask on that day. And if we could go straight to the point so that the colleagues from our guests can be able to answer. And please, we will take rounds. And if you can note the questions, then I'll give you an opportunity to respond to our colleagues. So, honorable members, the time is yours now to ask questions. I will note hands, and the first one I'm noting is Honorable Nolu Chungu, followed by Honorable McDonald, followed by Honorable Ketamabala Sithole, in that order. Honorable Nolu Chungu, Honorable McDonald, and Honorable Ketamabala. You may go ahead, Honorable Nolu Chungu.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to our visitors and to my colleagues. When you were invited, were you aware what is that you had to present on? The reason why I'm asking this is because in your presentation, there was no mention of the public protector's report. Now, I want to know if, have you ever heard of it? If you did, what did you do about the findings of the public protector and the recommendations thereof?
Honorable Nolu Chungu, sorry, just indicate to whom you are specific, because there are three entities here, so that we don't have confusion when somebody must respond. Sorry to interrupt you, if you can. But I guess that one affects everybody. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
This one specifically goes to DTIC. And you've just mentioned that you are engaging the Department of Transport regarding this matter. When did you start your engagement? And then to NRCS, in your presentation, you claim that NRCS was established in 2008. But Toyota claims that they have notified you when this happened, and they notified NRCS of the practice of the conversion and their disapproval of the practice. What did you do when you got this from Toyota? Given the fact that you are saying you were established in 2008, because that is what you mentioned in your presentation, why did then the public protector found that NRCS failed to ensure that all MBIs comply with compulsory specification in order to restrict the illegal conversion, and yet you were not in existence? Thirdly, you have powers to inspect, search, and seize. You came into effect in 2008, and you were informed of the practice. With the powers that you have, what did you do to assist the investigation and stop the practice? And then to SABS, do you do your own tests, or do you rely on documentation received from other bodies like NRCS? If a product complies, that's what your documents say, that if a product complies with requirements, a permit is issued, and regular product testing is conducted throughout the year, and feedback of test results is given. Did you do that with the panel vents that were illegally converted? If you did not, can you explain why it was not done with this product? My last question. Also, assessments of quality systems are made twice per year and full reports are issued. What were your findings when you did these quality checks with the product, and where are those reports? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Noel Chungu. Honorable McDonald, time is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your indulgence, Chairperson. Most of my questions have actually been covered by the previous speaker, but Chairperson, regarding the SABS, I just wanted to know, Chairperson, how is it that they tested the vehicle that they know is going to have passengers in it, and they do a rollover test? They don't do all the tests that you would expect them to do to make sure that the poorest of the poor are traveling in safe transport. Chairperson, I just want to add that, Chairperson, there's a difference in the maximum allowed of weight the panel van can carry versus the maximum amount of weight that the actual minivan can carry. I do not understand how all of these departments together have found it that they can issue certificates to a vehicle that they know is going to literally kill people on the road. Chairperson, I mean, the DTIC says they don't have funding for engineers, so it might have slipped through. The other one says, well, we're heavily reliant on the SABC. The SABC is heavily reliant on this one. The Toyota wrote to all of these and to the department in 2005 already, and expressed its dissatisfaction in that these vehicles are being converted. Chairperson, but the fact of the matter is, today still vehicles are getting converted. Either Toyota, Fords, Volkswagen, all of these vans are illegally converted today as we speak. And they are done by MIBs that are registered with these departments, and they are on the roads. I drove behind a truck from Bloemfontein to to Kelly's view, and this truck is for Atel Millery. This truck has got an unlicensed 50-seater bus attached to the back of this truck. It has got no rights to be on the road, Chairperson, but that truck was sold because and registered for that 30 people because they can do it, because it's not for money. So, Chairperson, we must, the whole thing is broken. We need to find a way that we can stop this registration of these converted vehicles in total, so that we don't have a situation where people are dying on the roads because of lack of funding, lack of understanding of engineering, the lack of understanding of the whole process. And then we, in our endeavor to make the economy open to everybody, we are killing people on the roads, Chairperson. Let me leave it there. I don't want to lose my temper for a second time today. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much. I have calming tablets for you if you need any. I'm sure I can assist. Honorable Ketama Bala.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, and greeting to honorable members this afternoon and the officials from different entities. My Chairperson, because I was not in the meeting, I don't know, or I was in the meeting or I was stuck somewhere, because I don't remember these entities coming to the committees. My first question, Chairperson, is that one. My first question is directed to NRCS, because according to the report of the public protectors, they say they failed to effective and efficient step to ensure that all NRCS comply with the compulsory specification as envisaged by the NCS Act. So what I'm trying to check, Chairperson, is that what step have they took after they received the report from the public protector? If they took a step, how far with those steps, and what is the consequences that have they put in place for those who fail to comply with the regulations? And the other one, Chairperson, is that one of the Toyota wrote a report to NRCS advising them about the practice of the conversion of Toyota Quantum panel vans and manufacturing disapproval of the practice. If they get that report in 2009, what I'm trying to check with them, until now, what have they done as an entity to ensure that the compliance is in place for. And the other one, Chairperson, I'm worried about this one. It was admitted that 436 vehicles were retrofitted to make them safer, but the NRCS failed to conduct surveillance to ensure the safety of the public. I'm trying to check with the NRCS. Do they take the public into their confidence? Because you see, if you receive such a better report, but you don't take action, or you don't act according to what the report here, it means they are not serious about what is happening. And the other Chairperson is that one to SAPS, because I'm worried, Chairperson, if you check the SAPS receive a report from the Department of Trade and Industry in 2009, because they were trying to determine the illegally converted vehicles could be retrofitted so that it is to ensure safety of the commuter using them. I'm trying to check if they actually fail to ensure that they are conducting adequate qualified assurance tests in those vehicles, why did they fail to actually conduct that quality insurance? And then the last one, Chairperson, is that one of the I think I would come back, Chairperson, because if you check, do they have an information how many of these converted motor vehicles have been involved in an accident? If they do have that information, if they don't have, why they don't have? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, colleagues. I will come back to DTIC, NRCS, and SABS. I surely think you have picked up the questions. May I suggest that where you feel like the questions you can combine as you respond, you do that. I want to add on only one. I've got many, but so that we don't get confused. As you respond to Honorable Noel Chungu's question about the Public Protector's Report, are you aware of it? What did you do? Can I also ask you to respond if you are aware of the main complainant to the Public Protector? Did you get sight of what he said? And that might sound duplicating, because that's what the Public Protector did. But remember, the Public Protector had a limitation of where she could go. Did you have sight of those issues, and what did you do about them? Secondly, I want to know from each and every one of these three entities, are you aware of the current process or the process that was opened to amend the National Road Traffic Act? If you are aware, have you made recommendations to close the loopholes that Ntate Demana spoke about? I will leave their mind just adding what my colleagues have already asked, and I will invite the DTIC now to start. If I may assist, I will give you 5 minutes each, so that if there are any opportunity, we can rather have more time for you to respond again later. So DTIC, your 5 minutes starts now.
Thanks again, Chairperson. As you are aware, we implement our policies and our strategies through the two entities. So our input will be rather short, so that the entities who are on the call phase gives us much more fuller details of what has happened. Yes, we are aware of the Public Protector Report. And in fact, in the Public Protector Report, it did not have any substantial recommendation for the department to implement, except to say that the department must see to it that the coordination between the regulators is better, and there's better communication between them. So it that does show that in terms of policy, when it comes to public transport, we are not the responsible department. I think my colleague mentioned last time that it will be better if our other colleagues from the sister department are here, because then we can, you know, complement each other in terms of what we are doing together. So on my own, I can say that since about 2009, we have been engaging in a number of issues, including this issue of convention of panel vans into taxis. And as I have mentioned, the policy still stands. You have a two-pronged approach which allows some MIBs to be registered and monitored and inspected, and others not.
I thought you said that you don't have much of a response in that demand. Maybe you
have
to come after your entities have responded. Then maybe you can close any gaps, if any. Is that okay?
That's fine. Thank you very much, Chef, for the guidance.
But, am I correct in saying that you are saying directly to Mamunol Chungu that you did see the report of the public protector? You did nothing about it because you were not mentioned as DTIC. Is that a correct summation?
Not really, Chairperson. I'm just saying what the report says, but saw to it.
We all know what the report says. Let's keep it simple. Are you saying you did nothing because you were not part of the people who had to act according to the remedial action? Am I correct or not?
No, you're not correct, Chairperson.
Okay, I'll give you an opportunity at the end. Let's invite the NRCF. You will have an opportunity to respond. I will not leave it hanging and be unfair to yourselves. But let me invite now the NRCS. Your 5 minutes starts now.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Nolu Chungu, your questions. The NRCS was established on the 1st of September 2008. Before then, it was a regulatory division within the SABS. When the NRCS Act was passed in 2008, there was that separation between the SABS and some of the staff within the SABS to form a new entity as a going concern. So in terms of the transitional provision in the Act, anything that was done by the regulatory division within SABS would be carried forward as if it was done by the new entity, which is the NRCS. So, but that timing is key in terms of determining the issues at hand. Why did the PP find that NRCS failed to ensure that MIBs comply with VC while they have the power in terms of Section 17? The Section 17 of the Act obviously became effective on the promulgation of the Act. That was even before the issue of panel van conversion arose. That issue arose, I think, already in 2005, 2006, 2007, somewhere there. The issue of illegally converted panel van has already arisen. The NRCS has been appointed as an inspectorate for MIB. It has specific functions in terms of that appointment. And even that appointment, I must just clarify that it is an appointment that was made to SABS, but because the new regulator was established, we assume the role of the SABS in the regulatory space in terms of taking that appointment forward as if it was us that were appointed in terms of the transitional provision of the Act. So it is not correct that NRCS failed to stop the practice of illegal conversion, because as the PPSF has indicated in her report, when the issue arose, it arose even before the NRCS was established. In other words, by the time the problem was picked up or the complainant complained, the vehicles were already on the road. And we must understand that distinction between the role of the regulator and the role of the other regulators, including the RTMC, Department of Transport and the like, because that distinction is very important in apportioning the blame, if any, should happen. So the illegal the vehicles were already illegally converted. That information came from BOT and RTMC because they have access to the system, the INATI system, which comprise of the individuals, vehicles, the owners and the details. Whereas as the NRCS, our work ends when we issue a model number. Once you issue a model number, the MIB is able to create individual vehicles out of that model number to ensure that those vehicles are registered to operate on the road. The reason
Mr. Mamadisa, can I assist you? Can you confine yourself to the questions so that we can have enough time? You can add on and summarize. Rather than saying what is the role of INATIs and so forth, there were specific questions. I would advise that you confine yourself to the question. Of course, elaborate where it's necessary on the question you are answering. Yes. Thank you.
So, yes, I'm dealing with the question of the finding that we failed to stop the practice in that sense, Chair. So the process to convert these vehicles, I mean, to legalize the conversion of these vehicles was approved by DOT. There were specific requirements that were laid down by DOT, which was followed by the publication of the regulations, which stipulated what are the requirements to legalize these illegally converted vehicles. So NRCS's duty was to ensure that those vehicles are inspected and a letter of authority is issued if we are satisfied that the vehicle has been converted to the requirements of the specification and the requirements of the TRP regulations as approved by the Department of Transport. That approval was made irrespective of the objection from Toyota SA. So our role, although we are aware of the objection between by Toyota, our role is confined to the legislative provision because we are a creature of statute. We have to comply with the law as it was. In terms of the law, DOT set the requirements, and those requirements did not require an approval of Toyota. And for that matter, I may add, Chair, that even if the Toyota did not give approval or they raise an objection, our role is to ensure that the vehicles still comply with safety requirements because the submitter of that vehicle has to submit the test reports that prove compliance with the compulsory specifications and with the TRB regulations. The Honorable McDonald, I think the issue that we are shying away is the fact that the vehicles that have been illegally converted, they were illegally registered as such by someone else. and that someone else has contributed to those vehicles being able to operate illegally on the road and posing a danger to the public. And that will not be the accountability of the NRCS, because we don't deal with individual registration of vehicles. It is other entities that have to ensure that every vehicle that is registered, it has the required documents, including a letter of authority from NRCS, ensuring that, proving that the vehicle is safe to be registered in that category that is being registered. So there is a huge failure that led to the vehicles being able to operate on the road. What steps have we taken after we received the report? Firstly, we have engaged the Department of Trade and Industry, and I've written a letter to the DG and the minister informing them of the report and its implications. And since there were no remedial actions in the report, we informed the DTIC that despite the fact that there are no remedial action in the report, we have taken a proactive step to ensure that we review the process of homologation of these converted vehicles, including the proposal to amend the VC, as we have alluded to in our presentation. The second thing that we have done was to also engage the Department of Transport. And we have been engaging with the DOT for a number of years, trying to resolve the challenges in the mandate that they've given to us. One of the challenges is that we don't have a formal letter of appointment. The letter of appointment that we have is the one that we inherited from SABS, as I've indicated. And there are also other issues that we have picked up in the implementation of the mandate that they have given us. So we needed to conclude a new MOU with them so that we can clearly define the roles and close all those gaps. And we have been engaging them since 2009. And I personally escalated the issue to the DG there. I requested a meeting with him so that we can resolve some of these challenges and finalize the MOU. Unfortunately, the DG delegated the DG, acting the DG. We had that meeting, but still today we're still waiting for a final a way forward in terms of resolving the issue of MOU and the mandates issues. In addition to that, there are other process improvement issues that we have implemented within the organization. One of it is to establish a task team comprising of inspectors. I think I will just dismiss the correct Dr. Dimana when he says that we don't have competency. We have qualified inspectors within the NRCS. The issue of capacity is in terms of just the numbers of the inspectors that we have. Is not necessarily a competency issue. So we have a highly skilled team of inspector, albeit limited in terms of the numbers. But that team is investigating all the, has been tasked to investigate all the allegations of non-compliance, including illegal conversion of vehicles. And currently, we have identified two MIBs that we are investigating. As one of it was due to complaints, while the other one was proactive steps that we have taken as the NRCS. And in addition to that, Chair, we have recommended or initiated the process for the revision of the standard and that is administered by SABS, is funds 103.19, which deals with the requirements for registration of MIBs, so that we can be able to close the gaps that we have identified in the process. We also want to introduce conformity of production requirements in our compulsory specification. Those are the proposed amendments that we are doing going forward to ensure that we manage this conversion issue better. But I think one last thing before I close, Chair, is the fact that there seems to be an assumption that conversion in general are illegal. No, conversions are permitted by legislation and they are going to happen in line with the legislation. What is not permitted is the illegal conversion by other unscrupulous MIBs or even unregistered MIBs. Those are criminal activities that must be distinguished between from the prescribed process of conversion of vehicles, which is permitted by legislation. I thank you, Chair. I will come back to any question if I have missed it.
Mr.
Mangu, you are on mute, Chair.
All right. Okay. Apologies. Honorable McDonald, is that a hand or you didn't forget, you didn't remember to lower it?
Chairperson, I would like to have a follow-up question at some stage, Chairperson, but
you certainly will.
Thank you, Chairperson.
You certainly will, yeah. And let me give the opportunity to the SABS. I was generous to the NRCS because a lot of answers I expected from them. Can I invite the SABS also to respond to the questions asked?
Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members. Thank you for the questions. Chair, is it okay if I leave my video feed off or do we need
it? It's okay. Yeah.
Thank you. Chair, in response to Honourable Nolochunga's question, Honourable Member, in terms of our standard practices, we do our own tests. Sometimes where we don't have capacity, we outsource these to other accredited labs. All the labs that that we work with are accredited by SANUS, which is the National Accreditation System, and what I'll do is I'll just ask Lungelo just to talk further about the testing that we've done. My understanding is that there were three tests effectively that we did. We did the rollover protection, which is the SANS 1563 on the 2005 version, the SANS 1430, the 2007 version, and then the 28 degree tilt test. In terms of how standards are collated and how we test, in the standard, it would list the kind of test, the testing methodology that one would have to implement or test for, and we would follow that. Any product that meets the requirements of that particular standard, we would then grant grant the certificate or the permit, as it were. In terms of Honourable MacDonald, I think that just in terms of your question, standards are set in terms of a consensus development process, and it comprises of industry, there's academia, there's government, regulators, everybody comes together to determine what should be in the standard. So as the South African Bureau, even though we promote and we develop these national standards, it's by consensus. So we as the Bureau are not allowed to go and amend or change any of the standards, unless it goes back to a technical committee, they then have to look at that. The three tests that I mentioned, these were requested by the SA Taxi Finance, and we tested those three. We only did those three tests. But Chair, I would just perhaps like Lungelo, with your permission, just to come in and talk about the test, and then Joseph, just in terms of your question, Chair, just the main complainant, and then have we given any inputs in terms of the National Road Traffic Act, if that's allowable. Thank you, Chair.
That's fine. Go ahead, Lungelo.
Afternoon, Chair, and honorable members. Mine is not going to be too long. Jody has touched on the test.
Can I quickly interrupt?
Yes, Honorable Noel Chungu, please do.
Thank you, Chair. We are not looking for a general answer or what they do. We want to know specifically what they did with these vehicles because they went through their test. We don't want them to tell us what they do. We are referring specifically to those vehicles. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable. No, I picked that up, but maybe I was going to raise it later. It's good, that intervention. Go ahead, Lungelo, and then anybody who must respond there will have an opportunity. But go ahead, you are just started.
Okay, thanks. To the question, the testing that we do, we test according to the requirements of the standard and according to the request of the client. So in this particular case, the request was for the three tests that we Jody has alluded to. We tested these three tests according to the requirements of the standard, and they complied to the requirements of the standard. So that's what we have done as SABS. Thanks, Shay.
So, Jody, would you want to respond, or is that the right answer? The question is, you had the report, and it identified specific issues.
Yes.
What did you do about that report as it relates to those vehicles? You are not clear if the request you got from SA Taxi Finance was on the alleged illegally converted ones or on the ones that were properly tested. So hence the issue that your question, your response is more generic. But let's get the last colleague you had identified to talk to the response to the NRTA, and then let's hear if anybody has got a response to that.
Thank you, Chair. Joseph?
Joseph has left you. And Adema Sele, are you in the meeting? I'm sure he told Mr. Ndobongwana that he's leaving. he's not in the meeting. He just logged in and then he left you alone.
Chair, I think he's Joseph Leotlela. He's in the meeting. I'm not sure if
he's battling to unmute.
I think he's now left, Chair.
Maybe he'll reconnect. Maybe, but he's here. Is that Michelle? Is that the same Joseph Michelle, or is there another Joseph? I see Joseph Michelle.
It's Joseph Leotlela. Oh, sorry, Chair.
Okay. All right. When he's back, he will indicate. Are you back? All right.
Yes.
Welcome back. Please. I hope you got where the colleagues would like you to assist.
Thank you, Chair. I must apologize. I had lost connection for about a minute or so.
No problem. You are.
I had originally captured the questions, and I hope that they will address what the honourable members have asked. Perhaps, Chair, as a point of departure, one should start by answering the question that you have posed, because it's the crux of the issue. The question as to whether the SABS is aware of the Public Protector Report, and what has it done with the report? Chair, I can confirm that the SABS is aware of the Public Protector Report, and that during the Public Protector investigation, the SABS is one of the entities which were engaged by the Public Protector in order to make submissions regarding the allegations were raised against the SABS. And during the process, the SABS has indeed made extensive submissions to the public protector in an attempt to assist the public protector understand the role of the SABS in this matter within the context of the mandate of the SABS. And perhaps before one makes an attempt of answering then the follow-up question, I think, and I stand to be corrected by all my colleagues in the room today, but I think it's important for honorable members to understand that the SABS was invited into a process to retrofit, that is to fix an illegality after the fact. And I think that's an important point. Hence, we refer to the process of retrofitment. The SABS was invited to participate in a process that would have regularized an illegality that had already occurred, meaning that there were vehicles which were converted illegally without the knowledge of the regulators and all the stakeholders involved, and vehicles were on the road. So the process to retrofit them is a process which was then approved by the Department of Transport, as my colleagues has alluded. Now, having said that, Chair, I think there are two critical questions that were asked by the Honorable Katamabala and Honorable McDonald. I would like to address them jointly because I think they refer to the essence of the question is the same. The question is, why did the SABS fail to conduct adequate tests? And obviously, Honorable McDonald posed the question differently, but with the same context, and said, why not do all the tests that would have been, that the SABS would have been expected to do? Now, this is important, Chair, and I think the record from the public protector will also reflect, when touching on the responses received from the SABS, how the SABS explained its role. The SABS has a test house. However, the SABS does not have the capacity to test a product as complex as a vehicle in its entirety. But what the SABS does within its mandate, it conducts tests according to approved South African national standards, meaning that we do not get involved in testing for research and development, for vehicles and all that. We were confined to testing according to standards. And these tests are conducted based on a specific request for a test, meaning that these were not tests that were conducted voluntarily by the SABS. SABS did not call for the vehicle to be tested, voluntarily. There was a specific request within that retrofitment process wherein the SABS was roped in and the SABS was requested to conduct specific tests. Now, there has always been a question, and this question also emanated from the public protector as well, that why didn't you do more? And the response, Chair, is straightforward in the sense that when the SABS test, there is a specific standard against which the SABS tests. And this standard, it's a document that contains the minimum requirements for quality, which would have been agreed upon in advance, or which would have been agreed upon, as Jody has indicated, through a consensus process, which involves various stakeholders within the country. It will be your regulators, it will be your experts, academia, and industry role players. Now, once this standard has been agreed upon and is approved, when the SABS conduct tests, it is confined to this standard. And that is exactly what happened. When you look at the public protector report, the SABS conducted the tests as reflected in the public protector report. And if we say the SABS, for instance, conducted a tilt test, that test would have been conducted according to a standard that is specific to a TILD test or a regulation that is specific to a TILD test. And hence, it has always been the SABS's difficulty to comprehend or to even respond to the public protector as request as to why the SABS did not conduct adequate tests. Because the tests that the SABS can conduct can be identified and are specific. And in this case, the SABS did conduct the tests which it was requested to conduct.
All right. All right. I think one thing that you didn't respond to is whether you have seen the publication of amendments to the National Road Traffic Act. And if yes, have you contributed there, or are you intending to do anything about it to close these gaps that are affecting your work as it relates to the Department of Transport?
Chair, I'm not aware of the review process, to be specific to the question. And now that we are aware, I'm sure it's something that SEPS would also want to contribute to. Thank you, Chair.
All right. That's fine. Thank you. Thank you very much. Colleagues, I want to come back to you. We've got very little time. I thought we had a lot, but we said, I'll come to you now. I'm coming to members. I'm just trying to assist you as I call you again. To say, colleagues, we've got, we don't have much time as I thought we have, but I want to give you now a round to come back and give your follow-up questions. But I would really plead with all of us that we leave ourselves some time to discuss a little bit at the end, because our next interaction next week is the last one. We have to close this and start shaping our reports. I think we have the gist. So I've seen all of your hands. This time I'll start with Honorable McDee, because he had asked earlier to have a follow-up. I will follow up with Honorable Ketama Bala. Lastly, it will be you, Honorable Nolu Tsungu, for the last round, if you do have. In that order, colleagues.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your indulgence. Thank you for the presentations that were given. Actually, Chairperson, we are getting to the bottom of this thing, Chairperson, and the honest truth is that the whole system is broken. Toyota has clearly indicated in 2005 that the conversion of these vehicles are unsafe. And we still find a way of circumventing that with tests that are done specifically to alter the outcome. So, Chairperson, if you want to have somebody pass mathematics, you can't just give him the 1 + 1s and then the 2 times table and then give him a certificate that's proficient in mathematics, because those are the only 2 tests that you asked him. That doesn't mean it's proficient in the Chairperson, I want to state categorically that when Toyota said these vehicles were unsafe, we should have immediately stopped any conversions of these vehicles. I mean, Toyota makes a million of these vehicles. They designed the vehicle. They've got every aspect of this vehicle they know, and they have declared that vehicle unsafe. Who are we then to afterwards give this to MIBs to say, now you can convert it as long as you do 1, 2, 3 things. But don't worry about a brake test. Don't worry about this test. Don't worry about, we'll only do these other 3 tests, and if they comply, that's fine. Chairperson, I really think we need to have an honest look at how we are doing things. Chairperson, as a person with an engineering background, I would really would like to have these tests that were done and the results of these tests, if possible, to be furnished with these documents so that I can thoroughly read through them before we make our final assessment. And because the SF Taxi Finance asked for specific tests, and they excluded a lot of other tests. So I wanted to check what other tests should have been done to make these vehicles safe, Chairperson. And then that's it, Chairperson. I don't know. There's nothing else to ask. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. Thank you. Honorable Ketema Bala, the time is yours, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not happy about the answers from NRCS, because specific questions have been asked, but they are diverting. They are answering something that we never ask. Chairperson, the other thing I want to find out. They were aware that the illegal converting of these vehicles for use as passenger carrying minibus were unsafe. So the question is, what they did for protecting the public on those conversion of those taxis? I know that they have to act. They have to see their section 17 of the NRCS Act, but they fail actually to comply with their act. So now that's why I'm not happy, because they are just washing instead of answering what have they done for when they receive the public protector's report, when they receive the Toyota's report, what have they done as an entity? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ketema Bala. As Honorable McDee lowers his hand, I think the response from NRCS, Honorable Ketema Bala, is the best that they could. I don't think asking the same question again will produce any different answer. But I think it's a reflection of the NRCS, and it's an indication to us as we wrap up our report to say, what do we say about NRCS? I think let us have that approach, because if the answer is not coming, you can't dig it out, because then you are not going to have an honest answer. That is the reality. I understand your frustration, but I'm just saying that is what it is. Honorable Noel Chungu, I don't know if you have a last bite or a follow-up you'd like.
Yes,
I do. Before I go back to our guest, please go ahead.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Chair. You know, Chair, I so wish that everyone can take cue from the last speaker of the NRCS. Straight and honest.
SABS.
Was it SABS?
SABS,
straight,
yeah.
And honest. We are not aware of the bill, and we'll have a look at it. Two, this is what happened, this is what we're asked to do, and that's it. It makes our life so easy, instead of people going around in circles trying to cover up. A simple example is that Dr. Damana,
yes,
says NRCS complained in 2009 that they've been given this tax, but they don't have funding. On the other hand, you hear NRCS saying, we know nothing about it because at the time, this did not reside with us. It resided with SABS. And then you hear that all of a sudden, there is not a clear answer as to who is responsible for the implementation of Section 17. And by the look of things is that people work in silos, and I would recommend that in future, when a request of this nature comes to you, you all know who is who in the zoo, who does what. It would be best for you to come together, see what it is that is needed. This is what you will cover. This is where the responsibility is. It is instead of coming here and just being concerned with covering up for yourselves. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I will not go back to you now. because you even didn't give me an opportunity to ask my own question. But I think I've seen somebody from the department here in the name of Mbele, unless it's a different Mbele. Department or RTMC. Am I correct? Okay. Maybe I've ambushed the person, and maybe it's not the right person. Colleague?
To interrupt them, Bella, you are seeing actually the colleague from the DTIC is not
Yeah. The initial also just matched everything. Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. I had questions also, but I want to give the DTIC, because I think at the beginning I took away your time to maybe make a reflection of what you have heard now. What is very clear, obviously, is that the NRCS and the SABS don't know what their mandate is as it relates to the mandate they received from the DOT. Why do I say so? There is no existing memorandum of understanding, because the NRCS is relying on what was signed with the SABS. There is nothing now. They say they've attempted, and I think DTIC has failed in their oversight role to make sure that that gap is closed. That is very clear. So it is no surprise, therefore, that these queries and the answers that we are getting from NRCS are the way they are. And most of the questions I had were on NRCS, and they were specific, but it is very clear that we will not get any answer. So as the Honorable McDonald has said, the whole thing is broken. I cannot agree with you more. And I think it will be up to us, colleagues, to act and do what we have to do and use our position as legislators to correct this, to protect the people of South Africa. If we are to rely on these two entities, nothing will happen, in fact. And it is very, very sad to say so. And I would like at this moment, before we wrap up, to invite the DTIC. You have listened to your entities. You have listened to the honorable members. I would like to hear your last comments on the matter, if any.
Thanks, Chairperson. Yes, we have listened to our colleagues from the entities reporting. It's clear to us that, as I mentioned when I started, that in the policy space, there is a lot to be done. And I'm glad to hear that there is a bill that is being considered. I hope that bill takes the issues of the conversions into account. The department has pushed the entities to report on where the gaps are back to the DOT, and that has happened. It has happened in 2009 already, but that has not been closed. And I know as a government official that some processes are slow, but I'm glad to hear from the committee that the committee is aware that actually the system is not working as well as it should. So I think that that gives us room to have the system improved from the policy space before we can worry so much about the implementation. I think the policy space is where we need to fix. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Robertel. DDG, I would be fair, although you are not well, not to ask if you want to say something. But don't say I made you speak, although you were feeling unwell.
No, it's okay, Chair. I mean, I think it's important that we, I think the points that Honorable McDonald raised are really valid, and all members of the committee. I think while we talk about mandates from different departments, different institutions, there's an impact to the broader population that is happening that requires that it's corrected. I think Dr. Dimani indicated at the beginning that the two-pronged approach that was approved initially, it created this loophole that as a Tandi, I could convert my private van for private use, and eventually it found itself on the road, being converted into a taxi and being used to deliver and transport people. I think the issue of registration of vehicles and the linkages between what we do in NRCS and SEPs and what Department of Transport and their entities ought to be doing, it requires to be really streamlined so that it's on the basis of a certificate from SEPs and NRCS that a vehicle can be registered, not the other way around. Because once the vehicle is registered and is on the road, it's deemed to be fit to be on the road. So I think it requires that the system itself, we are very clear about whose roles and responsibility and what comes first, what comes last, so that we are able to really streamline the processes. I'm glad that the bill is being introduced. Chair, as you know, as a department, we support the automotive industry a lot. It's one of the sectors that we have supported financially and in other non-financial ways to actually build assembly lines in South Africa. So to have scrupulous converters that are bringing taxis on the road that are actually eroding what our local OEMs could be producing for safe transport for the public is very wrong, and it's something that we don't promote at all, because at the core of the policy of the department and the policy of government as such is that we want to promote local manufacturing, local value addition, and so forth. So we'd like to see, you know, good taxis of good quality that are being on the road and are being, you know, are helping in the public system. So therefore, Chair, I really hope that I made this plea previously, and I guess I didn't win in my plea, that the Department of Transport comes with us to this committee, because I think if indeed the bill has been introduced, it provides opportunities for us to actually close all these loops that are already happening and continue to happen, because I mean, as SEPS colleagues were saying, their tests are voluntary. It's only when the taxi comes to their shores to be tested, they are able to perform the test, and the tests are limited, which requires that we also do a little bit of work on our side on how do we broaden the scope of testing to make sure that we are able to cover the issues of weight, the issues of structure, the issues of how the taxi ought to be configured. But I think, Chair, more than anything, probably it's about time maybe we do away with the converters themselves, the private converters, because those taxis are produced by OEMs. The OEMs know the panel vans better than anybody else. And as such, if the bill can allow that the conversion go back to the OEMs, because they would know what could really fit structurally on what was a panel value initially and what was the purpose thereof, it would really help us to take this conversation forward. Otherwise, we're going to keep on going round in circles, blaming one another and so forth. And we do agree and appreciate that in this space, the policy space is mainly driven by the Department of Transport, but it's supposed to be supported by NRCS and SEPS and the DTIC as such. And we require that that process actually be really improved going forward. I mean, we can't dwell much with what happened in the past, but it's important that we do things right to protect the lives of our people going forward and ensure that we do the right things going forward. Thanks, Chair, for the indulgence.
Thank you very much, DDG. And keep the cough to yourself, please. This thing has got a way of going through the lines. That was on a lighter note.
Chair, but it's unfair of you to diagnose me.
It is well, thank you. Thank you very much, colleagues. Thank you very much to the DTIC, NRCS, and SABS. Honorable Noel Chungu, is your hand freshly up or did you forget to lower it? I would like to wrap up, but I don't want to suppress you.
No, that's fine. And Honorable McDonald also requests for you not to forget them. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you. The SABS has already confirmed that they will make them available. And I hope that the Secretariat has noted them, but those reports were requested. But I did see a confirmation from the SABS that those test reports will be made available. So thank you very much, honorable members. I know how frustrating this can be. But once again, in wrapping up, I want to thank the DTIC. As I said, I would urge you colleagues that you do your oversight. It would appear that the NRCS and SABS, as it relates to this, might be stepchildren, I don't know, or the functions of transport are stepchildren. It is actually shocking, but the truth and honesty is appreciated, as Honorable Noel Chungu said, that both NRCS and SABS are not aware of a legislation being amended, and they derive some of their functions from this legislation. It is quite a shocker, but these things do happen. And on a side issue, you know, there are places that I can tell you, and that is the purview of the SABS to inspect these people, that you can get a roadworthiness certificate without going to a test place. Your vehicle can be roadworthy, and the SABS is there. So it is a bigger problem than what we think. What is also discouraging also is that both SABS and NRCS, to the greater extent, the department seem to have taken a approach that says, as long as the public protector has not said anything directly to us, we are grateful, so we won't do anything. It's quite regrettable, given that people are dying every day. Vehicles are being still converted. Up till 2019, there are records of vehicles that have been there are records of MIBs that I will not mention by name that are known in the public to be continuing to convert these vehicles illegally. But we appreciate your time. We appreciate what we have received. And I think as a committee, we will then make our recommendations to the mother committee. The department is represented here in the office of the minister. And I'm sure that they are picking up these issues. They might not be responding DDG to the technical issues, but they are fully aware of what is affecting the department. And I want once more to thank everyone for having indulged us and came back three times already. But I think today we got somewhere. To the honorable members for your patience, we appreciate your time. And as I said, I want anybody else who wants to leave can leave. Thank you very much for your indulgence in case you want other things to attend to. But colleagues on the inside, honorable members, I wanted to say that next week, when we meet, NAMSA should be our last meeting as we agreed. And let us start shaping. Of course, Advocate Nail has already assisted us as it relates to NAMSA, which will make it more focused. Let's start shaping our recommendations to the main committee so that next week, let it be a last interaction. Let's shape our recommendations as we would want to see them. And I also think as we engage on the amendments of the National Road Traffic Act, we've got a lot of homework now to do, as that process is now in our hands. So I'm lobbying you to look at that amendment bill and see what is it that we can do to tighten this, because our space is that of legislators and oversight. But I believe we have an opportunity now. Whether it's really there or not, we will be determined by that, that we can see what amendments we can influence in the NL, in the National Road Traffic Act, to tighten this area. So with that, honorable members, let me thank the team that supports us always. Valerie, Advocate, Memahati, and the good Dr. Ngesi, who always says very little. And everyone who's been here, our guests, members of the public, interested parties, we thank you very much for your interest. On the 10th will be our last interaction with NAMSA, and thereafter we will shape our recommendations on this matter. For now, the meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you,
members. Bye. Bye-bye.